Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 6, 2013. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
Oh, I'm Scott Long. I'm sorry. I was busy playing internet poker on my phone there.
Oh, man.
You know, sometimes I just get bored of the intro, you know what? And, you know, I'm just passing time.
Where do we even begin?
The worst thing is that I lost money right there.
It's rigged. It's against everything you stand for. You can't possibly be doing that right now during the show, Scott. How dare you?
Oh, man. Obviously, we're making fun of our good friend Senator John McCain, right? Because I'm sure most poker players have heard about this now. But a couple days ago, during this 3.5-hour Senate hearing on whether we should bomb Syria, McCain got a little bored, whipped out his mobile device, and was playing Texas Hold'em. And who knows how often he's done this, but this time a Washington Post reporter was sitting right behind him.
Idiot.
And snapped a picture of it and blew up the interwebs with this. And then, of course, he tried to make it better by sending out a tweet by, oops, you know, sometimes I get bored and I lost a lot of money. And then he had to send out another tweet. No, I was just playing for free. And so, you know, as soon as I see this, I'm like, you know what? I stand with you, Senator McCain. I think that without a doubt, I am ready to support your next bill, which I'm sure is coming, right, to allow all Americans to play internet poker during boring work meetings. This is the break that we've been waiting for, isn't it?
I was thinking just that. I'm like, okay, we got one of the most staunch Republican conservatives on the planet playing poker online. We've got to seize this momentum right now. Don't worry about Syria. Let that boil a little more. But let's pass some federal regulation for online poker using this guy as the poster child. This is unbelievable that he not only did that, because that's just what's so appalling is that he was doing it, but what he was doing is just like flies in the face of everything he stands for.
Well, yeah, I might disagree with you being a staunch conservative. He's obviously kind of a mavericky kind of guy. All but right. He's never been very, as far as I know, very excited about gaming at all.
Yeah.
But apparently, he, in his private life, loves it. I mean, because here's the other thing, all right? I love poker. You love poker, right? I hope, you know, that's why we have a show and a magazine and all this, right? I just can't get excited about playing free. I mean, what site he was on, Yahoo or something?
It could have just been a game on the phone. A lot of these.
Oh, yeah, I know, but I mean, you know, when I'm bored, I'll open the Open Face Chinese or the Cribbage or something that's got a little more nuance to it. Where I don't, you know, I'm going to check raising somebody out of their 7 not bitcoins. You know, I don't get very excited about it, right? But that's what he gets excited about. So imagine this, Chris, if we were to give him Poker Stars on his phone.
Yeah.
And let him play for some real money. He wouldn't even go on to the Syria hearing. He would have called in sick.
Can you imagine them like making this huge point or getting ready to vote and he stands there like, no, you sucked out on me. Because when you're playing for money, it's a lot more passionate than
How
it is.
How do you call me with that?
Oh, man.
But, you know, seriously, I mean, he's getting a lot of hate. Actually, he's taking a lot of hate for all this. And but, you know, if I'm Harry Reid, once we get through the Syria thing, I'm like, Jolene, get me Senator McCain on line one. And I'm calling him off, and I'm like, all right, dude, let's make some magic here.
That's right.
I'll have Joe Barton on the other line. I'll have all these other guys. And I'm like, this, because this is, I mean, now I'm turning this into a serious conversation. This is what we've been needing. This is what Harry Reid's been talking about. He needs a strong Republican governor, not in Nevada, to help push this through. And they don't get much stronger than McCain.
All right. That's right. Oh, man. And it's just, it is so funny to me that this guy can't be interested enough talking about the fate of human lives for 3.5 hours. He can't do it. And he's got to play a video game. And it just happens to be something that will actually help our situation, hopefully, in the future. But, you know, it's the seriousness of it, though, too. It's just, it's sad to me. You know, and how do you elect somebody like that now if he goes up for another election next time? You're like, hey, I'm doing a great job for you. Really? What were you doing for me when you were check-raising this bot?
Well, you're right. I mean, he wasn't playing Angry Birds. I mean, that would have been a disaster, right? But no, part of me, again, I mean, this is kind of the joke I made on Facebook and I just made here that, I mean, part of me gets it. I mean, we've all... I mean, fortunately, we haven't been in boring work meetings in the last 5 years, but right. Back when we were in the real workforce, did you ever get excited about going to any meeting at work?
No.
Ever?
No.
They're going to say, hey, naked Playboy models are going to be there, and I'm like, God, it's still going to be boring. There's still going to be that Nimrod down on the end of the table that's trying to get promotion. This is going to make it so boring I can't even focus on the Playboy models. And so, you know, I get it. I mean, it's really tough to say, you know, hey, you get bored during a hearing on bombing another country and you have to play poker. But, you know, I get the fact that it goes on too long. Because obviously in Washington, those guys are blowhards, all of them, right? So,
right.
But it's just so choice that he was playing poker on it. And,
what are you, Ferris Bueller?
I am. It is totally, totally choice. But, you know, I hope we can make some hay out of this. I haven't checked out the PPA site. I meant to do that. I really hope that they're having fun with it. I was going to call you yesterday and say, hey, maybe we need to put out a press release. You know, a funny one, you know.
Like the Onion version of it or
exactly,
something.
Exactly, exactly. I thought about doing that, but that's exactly, if that's PPA, I'd be all over that yesterday. Maybe they already did. So I hope they are because this is an opportunity. And in all seriousness, I hope we don't squander it.
Well, speaking of making fun of people and getting people to vote, Dazam started a poll on the forum, and basically it's in our Annie Up PokerCast Recaps forum, and it says, you know, basically, in the hand of the week are the O'Malley's moves. Who do you agree with more often, Chris, Scott,
yay,
or neither, which yeah. I would think is going to win. I looked at the poll, and I saw some people on there talking about why they disagree with me or whatever, and I think that's cool. I just don't think the poll itself is actually a fair poll.
It's very scientific. I had the PricewaterhouseCooper
look into it. Yeah, the three guys walk out with the envelope on stage.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
It was done legitimately.
Talk about boring.
Only because, one, I'm the one who really has to do all the analysis, whereas you get to just sort of throw in sort of devil's advocate thoughts and stuff, and it's only until you and I are completely disagreeing on something does it actually come out that you're playing or thinking differently than I am. For the most part, it's just you're listening to what I'm saying and reading the hand, and then if you feel like there's something that we could talk about, then you'll bring up something. But it's not always you and I are always on opposite ends of a hand of the week.
Yeah.
So it's weird. I like the poll, and I think it's cool, and hopefully you'll get a lot of people to go to the site and check it out who might not normally go there or whatever. But I thought for sure that you would win only because of that fact, or the runaway winner would be neither because we're both just dolts.
Well, that's a good point. You know, I'm kind of like the play-by-play, so I'm kind of like the Al Michaels, and you're not.
That's not. I'm not. I'm not. But
seriously, I don't know if you got on today, but I got on today, and there was a discussion of your play that I absolutely would not agree with. So, I mean, that's the most fascinating thing. I mean, it's a fun little poll, and I'm sure people are going to have a lot of fun voting against both of us. But that was interesting to see how other people perceive how we analyze hands.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
It wasn't at all the way I thought that you analyzed hands.
And I did go on there, and I did see that, and I sort of remarked about that. Guess that was where I got my opinion of how it's kind of not really a true poll, just because, you know, he got the impression that I play that way instead of analyzing someone else's play and offering an alternative, you know. So
that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was. It's very cool, and some of the stuff that he talks about is true, and some of it is not. I thought some of the things were self contradictory, but I love this. I love this idea. It gets people talking. It gets them thinking, and it, you know, gets people to go to the site. And polls are always very interesting to see what happens. So yeah, definitely go to antiupmagazine.com/forum. Go into the PokerCast recaps. And find the poll in there and give it a vote and see who wins. And I'm not necessarily sure I want to win the poll, actually. I don't know if that would be a good thing or not. I'm not sure.
You know, a better poll would be a fourth option that they should add in there. I have no idea the difference between Scott and Chris.
Which just happens a lot more than you'd think it would.
Almost once a day we get an email from someone just lambasting Chris, and I'm like, hey, they're talking about me. Or the other way around. Yes. So that would be funny as well.
Or, you know, even in person when they see us. They're like, hey, Scott. Scott's the other guy. Oh, hey, Chris. Yeah, I get you guys mixed up. I'm like, I know, because we look exactly alike.
Exactly alike.
People think we're brothers. All right, so listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 813-448-1120 or emails us at podcast@neupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something really cool. This comes from Adam, and he says, so I just couldn't stand the lack of online poker, and I went ahead and threw some money on Carbon Poker. That site's been around a while.
It has been, yeah.
He says, I know that I could lose it if the Department of Justice acts again. So I only put what I'd be willing to forfeit in that situation. My question is this. Is it possible that if a new online poker bill is passed, that it could forbid players who played on illegal sites from playing on sanctioned sites in the U.S.? Is that a provision that's even remotely enforceable? Could they really ban players who are playing for nickels and dimes on offshore sites? Well, a lot of things about this I don't think could possibly happen, but I'll let you talk first if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the nuts and bolts of what I would say is that it seems incredibly unlikely that this could even be done, even if the government wanted to do it. But the bottom line, a little caveat, you just never know.
Right?
You just never know. So if that's what you're really, truly worried about, you never know. But, you know, it's like, you know, hitting a one-outer, two-outer. That's kind of the odds I'd probably put on it, right?
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is, okay, let's say in my household, I was the one playing online poker at these, quote, illegal sites.
Very good point, yes.
Which aren't illegal, by the way.
Exactly,
so,
yep.
And then now they pass some sort of law, and they say, okay, Chris, you can't play online sites anymore. Okay, well, how do you know it's not my wife playing? How do you know it's not my 18-year-old stepson? How do you know it's not my 25-year-old stepdaughter? You don't know who's playing, so you're going to ban my entire house? Now we're starting to get into some really, you know, some serious, you know, crap that this country really doesn't stand for. So I don't think it's even possible, but you never know. I don't know what kind of weird law they could put in place. But
yeah, I mean, never know what they could try. I mean, the other thing, too, is we got some really talented lawyers in this country, and I would think one of them would just be like throwing a seal at a shark, you know, to ban this when they can go back and say, hey, these sites were never illegal. Oh, you know, and even after the UIGA, what my clients were doing was not illegal. So how can you ban them from what is going on now? And so, but you know, at that point, I mean, really, we got to get to the point where it's regulated now, which right now it's just in three states.
That's right. So it's a long way down the road anyway, but to think that they would stop individuals because they played on those other sites. And it would be monumental, Herculean, for them to try to even come up with the legislature. And then they even individually go to each house and then compare them to sites that half the sites don't even exist anymore.
Exactly.
And find out if you played on them. And so, yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that. What you have to worry about is that it gets actually passed and you actually get to play. And actually, if they would come after Carbon Poker, which I think by now they've moved on to something else. It's been too long. It's been over 2 years since Black Friday and whatever. So,
You know, here's the final thing. I'm guessing, well, obviously Adam is on Carbon. He was playing on other sites. We've all played on other sites. So at this point, what does it matter?
Yeah.
You know, if you've already played it, you can't take that genie out of the bottle, or put that genie back in the bottle?
Yeah, exactly.
Which way does the genie go in the bottle?
It goes back in.
Okay.
Because you can't quit and say, oh, I wasn't there. No, we got the records right here. You were there, buddy. So it doesn't matter now anyway. So enjoy yourself. Stop worrying about these things.
Right there.
Live your life.
Check Ray's stupid tour instead of stacks and stacks of checks.
Take all of John McCain's money. hey, I think we get to complete O'Malley's move today. Always very exciting, because I hate cliffhangers. You know, when I'm watching TV, and you're watching your favorite show, and then it's tune in next time. I hate that.
How many of our listeners actually remember that? They don't do that anymore.
No, they don't.
They don't even do cliffhangers over the seasons of the shows anymore now.
Yeah, well,
remember when we were kids, it was like Batman, like every week there was a cliffhanger.
They do cliffhangers for like season ending drama shows.
But not enough anymore.
Oh, not enough. Right? No, I think they don't do them anymore. Yeah,
it used to be like every series.
Yeah, yeah.
When it came to May, and you had to wait till September to find out what happened. Now it's like, all right, what's on FX this summer?
The worst ones are when they give you a cliffhanger, then they cancel the show in the summer.
Oh,
you never
terrible.
Know.
Terrible.
You don't know what the writers were thinking. Okay, let's refresh our memory with part one of O'Malley's move.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're playing 1-2 No Limit Hold'em in a card room we've never been in before with people we've never seen before. We bought in for $200 and are on the button. We post a big blind because we want to get in on the action. Under the gun calls, and it's folded to the cutoff, who min raises to 4. We look down at the 6 of spades, 4 of spades. Sure, I know, this is one of those dangerous situations, but we just can't help ourselves with the suited gappers. We call. The small blind, big blind, and under the gun all call as well. And with $10 in the pot, the flop comes down the ace of spades, 3 of spades, 3 of hearts. It gets checked to the cutoff, who overbets. He makes it $12 to go. Yikes. What does this bet mean? Remember, we have virtually no information on these players, but we're under the impression the rest of the table is going to fold, so we make the call. The turn is the 7 of spades, and the cutoff makes the same $12 bet. What is he doing? We decide to raise. We kind of want to let him know we already have the flush, in case he has the king of spades or a 3. So, this is one of those cases where our hand isn't disguised well at all, and we really don't care. There's $40 in the pot, including his bet, which we triple to 36. After thinking for quite a while, he calls. The pot stands at about $100, and the turn is the 5 of diamonds. The cutoff fires a third bullet, but this one, a measly $25. Only a quarter of the pot. We put just over 25% of our stack in on the first hand. Is this a value bet? Are we raising? What's the play here?
Alright, I would have preferred to raised on the flop, and I love doing this in this situation because it disguises our hand, gives us a chance to win the pot with 6 high. 6 high! Does that ever happen? And it's super, super duper sweet when we do hit our flush on the turn as we did here. But as played, I think we've given our opponent a reasonable assumption that a flush could be in our range. He certainly didn't flinch on calling our raise on the turn, and then he bet right into us on the river. So I'm fairly certain we're beat here, but he gave us a good price. So for $25, I'm going to make the call and find out for sure.
I'm going to say what I wrote last week, because that's what we promised to do, is to always do our reactions without adjusting them. But then I want to ask you a question when I'm done. So I said, yes, many hands beat us. In fact, we could have been drawing dead from the flop, so I just call because there just are too many combination of hands that give us not the winner. So the flush is nice, but it is teeny. All right, that's what I wrote. So now I wanted to ask you something about the flop bet, which I'm perfectly able to do in my arsenal. I am not one to shy away from betting a draw on a flop. Mm-hmm. But I wonder, are you taking a risk there of being re-raised again and being pushed off the hand that you had a potential to win? And also, are you scared at all? Because I did mention that we could be even drawing dead at that point. Are you scared at all of ace-3 or a 3, you know, or just being being behind already, or having a bigger flush draw shove on us, and now we've raised for no reason without seeing that turn?
The short answer is yes, 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 yes. I mean, how many freaking questions are you going to give me? There's fear. But to me, the flop is such a great street to put some misdirection in, get some information. And if we get bet off this hand, we get bet off this hand. I got six high.
Yeah.
I don't have a hand right now. So to me, I think the risk, the rewards outweigh the risk here, because it's a weird flop. There is the board's paired. There's just so much going on here that, I think the raise just helps us so much. Like I said, it might get the guy to say, all right, forget it. These guys have got something, particularly if I'm a tight player, which I normally would be, and then I win it with six high. If I get called and then the flush comes, yeah, you're right. I mean, he could have been on a flush draw as well.
Yeah.
And now have me beat, but I still got control of the hand at that point. And if he doesn't, then I'm going to get totally paid off on this because, I'm not saying that what I'm trying to do here is revolutionary, but I don't think enough players would play that flop the way I would play it, that I'm going to disguise my flush. I mean, the way we played it, to me, it almost screams flush draw. And that's what I don't want. I always want to keep my opponents guessing as much as possible. And I think raising puts a lot of doubt. I mean, because at that point, what am I raising with at that point?
No, I know.
He's got to think, hey, he's got an ace. He's got a big ace. He's got a tray. He's got a flush draw. He's got a straight draw. He's got air. I mean, the raise doesn't help my opponent define my hand at all, I don't think. Because there's just so many things I could be raising with there.
I agree with that. Another thing, too, then, is would you make a legitimate raise here? So would you be willing to bet $36 here and then
fold if I had to? Absolutely.
Yeah, you would.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I was curious
about. The times I get re-raised and have to fold there are so minimal to the times that I just get called or I win there that on average, it averages out, I think.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see what they say in the polls. let's hear part two and see what happens.
Hello again. If we did run into a cooler here, I'm not so sure we want to lose our entire stack on the first hand. Additionally, we have no information on this player, so we have no idea what he would min-raise with pre-flop. Folding here is extremely weak. We're getting 5-1 on our money. If we call and are wrong, we'd still have over 50 big blinds, and we could rebuy at any point. Calling seems like the safe play, and we do it, hoping it's just an ace, and it is. The cutoff table's the ace of clubs, jack of spades, and we scoop the pot. Furthermore, we got a bit of a maniac image, which will come in handy later at this table. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying it's okay to get in there and mix it up. The risk-reward factor can be much greater with marginal hands. But remember, be careful.
The maniac persona, I think, is a nice bonus to winning this pot. But again, not to belabor this point, but just think how maniacal our opponents would have thought we were for raising with six high on the flop.
So
there's maniac, and then there is just like throwaway to key maniac.
Yeah, they're like, you called a raise with that, and then you raised with it? Whoa, you're a maniac. It is remarkable to me, too, how many people think their ace is good on dangerous boards like this.
Oh, my gosh, isn't it?
Yeah, and even though we won, I was glad we just called. I thought they'll still remove, but...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But, the weird thing is it was trays, Because no one really thinks about trays. I mean, I think about it, and I probably lose a lot of money doing this, but if I have an ace, I wouldn't play this hand like win. And I would feel pretty comfortable with my ace jack on that kind of flop because I don't put anybody on a tray. Certainly not we're on the button, right?
Right.
I don't put anybody on the button with a tray. With any other kind of combination of the card that would work other than ace tray, and that's just a total cooler at that point. So, I think he got a little too excited eventually, but...
The other thing, too, is I think as you'll see in our Hand of the Week segment in a few minutes here, you'll notice that people would call a raise with something like ace-king or ace-queen here. So your ace-jack is still trailing. I would think that I wouldn't get that involved and then just
Betting
out with it and stuff. So to me, I just can't believe Ace Jack. I've lost. You know, I know you hate Ace Queen. I hate Ace Jack. When I used to play online,
I hate Ace Jack more.
Oh, man, I lost so much money with Ace Jack online. I can't even tell you.
Yeah.
So it just, to me, I just can't believe the way this guy played this hand and kept betting out. You know, including the river bet. When a flush is there, a boat is there, a better ace is there. Check call there, buddy. That's what I would think. But
you know, here's the thing. I totally agree with you, but again, and I'm a fairly timid player. I mean, think about it. If you go back and listen to what our whole discussion beforehand, I kept saying, this guy's got to put us on a flush, right?
Yeah.
And he's still betting at us. So he put, whether he meant to do this or not, he put reasonable doubt in my mind that I was ahead here.
Right.
So on one side of it, yeah, he plays it terribly. On the other side of it, I might give him credit, you know?
It's funny, though, because we're giving him every indication, like you said, that it's a flush. So why bet 25 on the end? Because that's an easy call with a baby flush. If he's really putting that doubt in our mind, he bets 75 on the end. He bets 100.
Yeah.
So that's what's weird about it. I just think he misplayed this hand a lot. But kudos to
O'Malley. Because if he gets raised at all, he can't really think he's good, right?
Well, he did get raised, right, in a turn.
No, on the river, though.
Oh, on the river. Yeah, no, he can't think he's good there.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's the other thing, too, is I think a call. You're only going to get re-raised in the end if we do anything there by a better hand, so I think a call is absolutely called for your nine.
So, I mean, the reason I bring that up is because I think you're right. Had he bet more, the more he bets there, the more we think about folding, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is not a reason necessarily to do it, because if we had a high propensity to raise him there, you don't want to throw 75 in this pot and just throw it away, right?
Right.
That's why you bet 25. But I don't think, when we look at the hand, there's no expectation that we're going to raise him here.
No, you're right.
At that point, why not put in the 75 and really make us think about it?
Yeah.
That's another level, I guess, of thinking here. But
man. Well, when I first heard this move, I thought, it's pretty straightforward. But now that we've dissected it, it was a really good move. Really, a lot of layers to it. So, excellent.
Hi, this is Cindy Violet, and you're listening to Annie Up.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And we have a special guest today, Chris, joining us to help us with a situation is Steve Blay of Advanced Poker Training, where you can find it at advancedpokertraining.com. Now, Advanced Poker Training offers web-based poker education for just $19.97 a month. And today's Hand of the Week submitter will get a free six-month subscription to Advanced Poker Training, so we appreciate that. Thanks for joining us, Steve.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Excellent. Well, we've been trying to get you on for a while. We've been looking for a good situation that we think that Advanced Poker Training can really help us with. And I think, because you already saw it, I think we would agree that this one's going to be a good one for us, isn't it?
Yep, it looks like a good situation to analyze.
Okay, well, start us off. Let's talk a little bit about Advanced Poker Training before we get into the situation. Give us a dime tour of what our Annie Up Nationals will get if they decide to become a member of Advanced Poker Training.
Okay, well, you know, if you've ever tried or looked at any other poker training sites online, mostly what you see is people watching videos you can watch of other people playing poker. And, you know, I always believe when we first started putting this site together 5 years ago that people learn best by doing, not watching. So we put together this simulator. Well, there's really three main parts to the site. First, we have a high-speed poker game. You can play up to 500 hands an hour against over 100 lifelike opponents.
Wow.
Man.
So, you know, right away, you're getting a lot of hands, you have many more hands than you'd get playing, let's say, at a live game. Secondly, you get advice at critical decision points during the hands, and we even save hands to your own personal database as you're playing if we think you made a mistake on a certain hand, so that later you can go back and you can watch a video replay of that hand with a focus on what you could have done better. So that's another really powerful part of it. And finally, you get a weekly training report. We save complete details of every hand you play, and the report goes into things like what hands you're winning the most with, what hands you're losing the most with, You know, how often you're ahead when going to the flop. Are you continuation betting enough? Are you being aggressive enough? And so much more. So you really, every week, you get a complete assessment of where you are in your poker training journey, I guess I'd say, and how you can continue to improve from there.
Well, you know, one of the interesting things is being able to select from several different game types, you know, that mimic the types of players you might find in real life, including Phil's Garage, which is a 1-2 no-limit hold'em game. It's a home game. Can you tell us what went into developing those different games and those opponents' profiles?
Yeah, that was certainly the most difficult part of the project. The software has 10 different levels you can play at, starting with Phil's Garage, as you mentioned, and as I said before, over 100 different opponents. And it took us nearly 2 years to develop the technology behind that. And last year, we finally were actually awarded a patent on it. So that was pretty cool. Actually, we had the U.S. Patent Office acknowledge that what we've done here is pretty novel. In a nutshell, your opponents keep track of the way you play and try to exploit that. So if you're being too aggressive, they're going to adjust to that. If you're playing too tight, they're going to start trying to bluff you more. So you're just like playing against real human beings if you play the same opponents over and over again. So it's a very realistic poker playing experience.
It's pretty scary. It sounds like artificial intelligence to me.
Yeah, there's a lot of AI in there, and yeah, it's sometimes scary how they really can outguess you and base their play on the way you've played in the past and keep track of your biases, I guess I'd say, while you're playing poker. But again, real opponents are going to do that too. So if you want to get better, you've got to be able to beat opponents that are being observant while you play.
That is cool.
Absolutely. Now, one of the benefits of the site, and one that I think we'll use with today's situation, is being able to set the training up to constantly hit trainees with similar situations and over, so it reinforces the learning process rather than just, oh, I remember that one hand I played like that. Can you tell us a little bit more how the members can do that with their training process?
Yeah, I think that's the most exciting thing about advanced poker training, is that any starting hand type you're having trouble with, you can tell the software to just deal you that hand over and over again. So if you're, the hand we're about to look at is a medium pocket pair, you can tell the software to just deal you medium pocket pairs every time. Or if you're having trouble with some specific hand like ace queen, a lot of people complain about ace queen, you can tell the software to just deal you ace queen 100 times in a row so you can practice with it. And you can even do what we call freezing the button, which you probably know what that is. If you want to just play under the gun, you're having trouble playing under the gun, or maybe you're having trouble defending your blind from the big blind. Again, you can tell the software to just deal you in the big blind 100 times in a row or 500 times in a row. So, comparing that to live poker, there's just no comparison. Really, when you go play at a card room, how often does a situation really come up that requires you to analyze it, and by doing so improve your thought process, maybe once an hour or something, whereas with advanced poker training you can have these tough situations thrown at you over and over again. So it helps you improve your poker skills so much faster than was ever possible before.
That's very cool.
Let me squeeze one more question here real quick, Steve, on that. So what is kind of the normal, or have you noticed a normal learning process for your members? I would think just by listening to you now that I would go into it and just kind of play like I normally would for a while and then get comfortable with it, and then at that point switch into, freezing the button or small pocket pairs or something like that. But do you see other people that just come in and just jump right into the specific situation kind of stuff?
Generally, people do exactly what you said there. They'll start off just playing normal poker against the bots. Occasionally, they might get it to only deal playable hands. That just speeds up the game a little bit. You can tell it, any hand that I would fold pre-flop, just don't even show it to me, just to make it quicker. So you can start off just have it dealing you nothing but playable hands. But yeah, you know, then you want to play with the software for a while, build up your statistics a little bit, build up your database a little bit, and then once you start getting those weekly reports and the session reports, then it will help you pinpoint where your trouble areas are, and that's when you go back and start adjusting the game, start playing against the right kinds of the opponents that are approximately at your level, start freezing the buttons, start dealing particular hands that you're having trouble with. So you usually do it just like that. Start off just playing the game, and then little by little start adjusting it to your trouble areas.
Well, excellent. All right, well, let's move on to this week's situation, which comes from T. Fenton. And it's from the 2012 World Series of Poker main event, Chris. One of our great dreams, obviously, for all of our listeners. And he won a charity tournament to get his way in, which I'm sure is probably the route that if any of us do make it in, it's probably the way we're going to go, right? So, right. So here's the thing. He says he has about 23,000 units. Starting stack was 30,000, of course. He says, all the other players in this hand have me covered. The villain has an accent I believe to be Russian, and I believe him to be a pro.
I love that comment. I don't want to get off on a tangent there, but I mean, I think that shows some of our biases. You know, it's not really clear from the way the user submitted this hand whether part of the reason he believes he's a pro is because of the Russian accent or not, but I think we do have those biases. I mean, those of us that are, you know, kids that grew up in the Cold War and maybe watched Rounders one too many times, you know, we do sort of assign people skill levels just based on the way they look or the way they sound. So I mean, I think it's important that we keep those biases in check when we play poker and let the cards do the talking first and foremost.
Now, if you had Oreos.
Oreos, yeah.
All right, so the blinds are at 150-300. The under the gun player raises to 900, and apparently folds around to us. We're in late position with pocket sixes. All right, guys, what do we do?
Well, that's certainly, I think that's an easy call there. I mean, the stacks are almost 100 big blinds deep, so, we're looking for a situation here where we can flop a set as we... As we did in this case, and the under the gun player raised. So usually an under the gun player is going to have a pretty strong hand. We would love it if this guy had something like pocket aces. That's the exact situation we want to get in here. We want to flop a set on this guy and bust him right here. So perfectly reasonable call with pocket sixes there.
How could I possibly disagree with someone who invented artificial intelligence? I 100% agree here.
I probably would have folded. I'm scared of Russian pros myself. all right, so now our hero did call, and obviously that is the right position, as we mentioned. Very deep stacks. This is the perfect set mining possibility here. And the big blind and the villain calls. The pot is 2850, and the flop is queen, six tray, rainbow, and obviously... Ricky Tiki Tavi, we hit our set here. The first two players check, and it is on us. What do we do?
I definitely bet here. I mean, people sometimes like to get fancy and try to slow play this. That would be a huge mistake here, I think. I mean, I think straightforward play almost always wins the most money. So I would definitely bet out, you know, maybe about two-thirds the size of the pot here and hope we get some action.
Yeah, I mean, this board is definitely dry. I mean, if it's rainbow, there's really very little out there for anybody to draw to or anything like that. So I think you want to get your money in with a regular ABC bet here, and especially since people showed. It's interesting that you're saying that the person who's under the gun checked to us, right? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. But the only thing that would alert me is if it's kind of fishy that he might have hit the upset.
It is, isn't it?
You know?
Yeah.
But I definitely want to put some money out there, especially if he does have something like aces and is trying to slow play us. But it could be a set of queens too. That's what always scares me. But I like the two-thirds size bet too. That's what I would do.
Okay. Yeah, and if he does have a set of queens, I mean, obviously we're going to lose a lot of money on this hand if he's got a set of queens. There's nothing we can do about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Where our hero decides to bet 2,000, which is about two-thirds of the pot. So I'm going to guess that we're all fairly happy with that bet, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And he says the villain thinks for a while and calls, and the other player folds. So we're heads up. Our pot is 68-50, and the turn is a tray. So our board now is queen, six, tray, tray. And obviously we improved to sixes full. And our opponent checks to us once again.
I would go back to the flop there and say, you know, it's very interesting that the villain called. The villain, if, as you remember, was in the big blind, and he was sandwiched between us and the original raiser. So, especially with there not being any draws particularly out there, as you pointed out, we have to put the villain on a pretty strong hand here to call when he's caught between us and the original raiser, who very well could have repopped us with a check raise there.
Right. Probably not as good as queen-queen, though, right?
No, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine the villain would have queen-queen. You certainly think he would have re-raised pre-flop out of the big blind with queen-queen. But we probably would be, you know, be easy to assume that he does have a queen at this point. Maybe king-queen or something, or, you know, queen-jack suited, something like that he would have called from the big blind with.
Yeah, I think that's right. Ace-queen might be a little too strong just because he might have done something there before the flop, but yeah, king queen or queen jack sounds really good to me right now.
Right. So regardless, then if we dismiss queen queen, then we're ahead here, right? Other than I guess the random quad threes.
Right.
Yeah, I think we have to assume that we're almost certainly ahead at this point.
Okay. Well, with a check to us and the pot 68-50, what's our play?
I think, again, when you're ahead, you got to bet. You don't want to, I don't know what would make someone do something as silly as checking here or trying to get more money out of the guy and trying to induce a bluff on the river. I think that'd be a terribly silly play. I think you got to bet here again, at least half the pot, maybe a little bit more than half the pot.
Yeah. Yep. That's what I was thinking, about 35 or 4.
Okay. Well, our hero bets exactly 4K. And gets a call. So far, he's playing it exactly like the three of us would play, right?
Yep.
All right, pot's 15,000. The river is a queen. So our final board is queen, six, tray, tray, queen. And now our opponent bets into us for 3,000.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I see that queen, I certainly would not be happy to see that queen come on the river. I mean, all signs are pointing to that we're beat now, but I don't know about you guys, but you look at how small that bet is. We're getting 6-1 on a call here. Personally, I am not man enough to lay down set my sixes full of threes at this point. So we're, you know, if the bet was you know, 15,000 or something, I think this could be a pretty easy lay down here. But for 3,000, I'm not going anywhere.
No, and the other thing too is he was in the blinds, so yeah, we thought it was a queen, but it could have been like ace tray, and he didn't believe us. Maybe that could be the situation. I don't know. And then he picked up that third three on the turn, so now that's why he's sticking around. And now he's got threes full of queens, and that could be why he's doing it. So, yeah, I have to call 6-1 on my money, considering that there are hands that we still beat here, and you just never know what he has.
Yeah, and that's a very good possibility. Ace, you know, let's say ace three suited, something like that. Certainly would have, he would have only owed 600 more from the big blind. He certainly would have called with that. So then that is a hand with, you know, he might have on the flop there, he would have had bottom pair with an overcard kicker. He might have called the flop bet, and then he got lucky and hit trips on the turn. So it certainly is a possibility he could have ace three suited.
All right. Well, our hero, as we are, was a little leery, but makes the call anyhow. And our opponent does table ace-queen for queen's full. And he says, river me and show my hand. He says the opponent had a stunned look, like he had no idea how far behind he was before the river, which I'm sure he wasn't. The follow-up questions that our hero gives are really kind of what I want to get into about bet sizing here. His question is, did I underbet the flop in turn? And I believe, you know, our discussion here, I think we thought he played it well all the way through the hand, so I don't think that we're going to disagree now. But I wonder, Steve, if you do this a lot, if you put a lot of pocket pairs, you set the software up to give you a lot of pocket pairs, obviously you're the appropriate amount of sets, and you're going to get these potential situations where you can figure out the right bet sizing. So is there any insight that you can give us on the repetition of that and what it means in terms of bet sizing?
Well, yeah, as you said, if you set it to only deal you these middle pocket pairs, these kind of situations are going to come up over and over again. There's the situations where you flop a set, and these can sometimes be tricky to play. And then there's also, you know, a lot of the times if you're heads up going to the flop, those middle pairs are really tricky to play because, you know, you still might be ahead on the flop. You're up just against one opponent. He could have ace king, let's say, and maybe he missed the flop and he's just c-betting into you. And so, you know, I think middle pocket pairs are real easy to play when you're playing at a low stakes table and you get six or seven players to the flop, and then if you don't flop a set, you just throw it away. It's real easy. But, you know, when you're heads up going to the flop, all of a sudden you've got a pair of eights or something, you might still have the best hand, and you're giving up a lot of value if you just throw away your hand every time you don't flop a set. So, you know, this situation here and lots of other situations will come up over and over again if you have it deal you these middle pocket pairs. And so I think it's a great way to train is to do that. You know, obviously on this hand here, I don't know about everybody else, but I couldn't improve much on his bet sizing here at all. I mean, I think if we go back to the flop there, the villain was practically drawing dead on us. I mean, he needed runner to beat us on the flop there.
Yes.
By the turn, he's only got two outs, the two remaining queens in the deck. Even the case three doesn't help him because he'll only improve to threes full of queens, and we'll still have sixes full of threes. So he had exactly two outs. He was a 23-1 dog. So I mean, both on the flop and the turn, we made a bet over half the pot, and he called it as a monster dog. I mean, this is a dream situation for us in the long run. So I think it's important for the person that sent this hand in to look at the positive of this situation and realize that, you know, in the long run, he's going to make a lot of money off of this. But unfortunately, this particular hand was not the long run. It was the short run, and, you know, a bad beat occurred. And, you know, but I think it's important to stay focused on the long run.
I'm also interested in if I was, you know, doing this on the software, going back and playing this several times from the big blind's point of view, because I think we talk about this on the show a lot, Steve. I don't know if you've experienced this too, but when I really stopped falling in love with Ace Queen, my game improved dramatically.
Yeah.
I found myself kept getting, you know, dominated with it, and particularly in the big blind when I'm out of position. And obviously, our opponent here won a massive pot off us. As we said, you know, those of us that believe in luck, he got lucky. Yeah. Our variance caught up here, but he certainly didn't play this very aggressively, I think, for the ace queen, and kind of put luck in the driver's seat here, where I think I probably would have played the ace queen completely different than he did.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, that's why I don't think this guy really was a pro, just, you know, going back to that comment about the Russian accent. I mean, I'm not really impressed with the way he played the hand with ace-queen, especially that value bet of 3,000 on the river. I can't imagine any pro would bet 3,000 there. I mean, he's just begging to get a call, but I mean, I think in the long run, he would have made a lot more by betting at least 10 or 15,000 there and, you know, hoping to get a call from someone like, you know, something like pocket sixes. But yeah, ace, as your original question, I mean, ace queen is probably the toughest hand to play in no limit hold'em because you get put in so many tricky situations because, you know, quite often on the flop, you only have it, at best, you have one pair, and one pair is, really a tough hand to play in no limit as the pot gets bigger. You know, really it comes down to a lot of you practicing pot control. And of course, as you said, you know, then you can be dominated by ace king, so you can flop an ace and hit your hand and still lose it, still lose the pot. So ace queen, definitely a tough hand to play. I think it's a great hand to just have, you know, have the software just deal it to you over and over again so you can practice with it.
And I didn't want to interrupt you because you were talking about some good stuff there, but if you go back to the comment he made about the guy being completely shocked that he was that far behind when the hands were turned over, any right. pro would have, you know, either already deduced that you had something like that, or at least, you know, made a bet that would have been more conducive to making more money on the end. So yeah, this guy wasn't a pro.
Yeah, there's several things he could have done to try to get more information about where he was, and just by check calling the flop and the turn, he really didn't he really didn't get any additional information out of the hero, and so he played it kind of passively, and he in most cases he would have lost a lot of chips on this hand.
Well, Steve, we appreciate very much you joining us today, and wish you the best of luck with advanced poker training. And we want to remind all of our listeners to check it out at advancedpokertraining.com and work on those situations that that are struggling with you. Thanks again, Steve.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. I really love the show, and I hope you'll have me on again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks, Steve.
All right, bye-bye.
Take care. So I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
Sleep too long in the house.
My gosh. They're like, hey, fat f***, you usually just give me food when I'm by the bowl. I'm like, I know I can't. No, you're fat.
Oh, man. Just a real quick story. When I was like 17, my parents went to like Aruba, and they said, we need you to house sit. And
oh, I remember you telling me this. Yeah. You put like 4,000 things of cat food out?
Well, I put all the food in one giant salad bowl. The bowl was like, literally, if you tried to make a circle with your arms right now, you couldn't put your arms around the bowl. I put the entire, like, 20-pound bag of food in there and said, I don't have to go back now. I just let the cat eat. The cat ate it all in, like, 2 days. I went back to the house, and the cat was massive. I felt so bad. There was nothing I could do.
Yeah, there's, like, no treadmill. That's what I was telling Laura. I'm like, you know what? I can't get these cats to exercise. They run around the house all day anyhow. I mean, it's like, you're just going to feed them less. I'm like, I know. I'm sorry.
Just get them on a leash and take them on a walk with you when you do.
Yeah, we used to do that with Inky. These cats won't even, they won't even let us put, it was funny when Laura bought them collars.
Yeah.
And these cats, you can tell, never had collars in their lives. So she bought them, and she tried to squeeze around Draper's head, and I thought she was going to die right there. And I'm like, this ain't going to happen, darling. Like, what if they get out? I'm like, we're just going to hope they don't get out.